This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.
Welcome to The Mash, where we talk all things bourbon. And maybe some things that aren't bourbon, but go well with bourbon. Cheers.
Welcome into the latest edition of The Mash. I am your host, Mark Cox, and thrilled that you're with us again for this next episode, because I spend a lot of time, like a lot of you who love bourbon, trying to educate myself. And I do that a lot on social media and just try, you know, joining different Facebook groups and always trying to educate myself, because that's one reason I started this podcast, was to learn more about it and to talk to people who are experts about it and aficionados. And I've stumbled across a group that's actually based right here in St. Louis, the St. Louis Bourbon Society. James Thomas, Drew Chostner are in the studio with me for this episode of The Mash. And gentlemen, welcome in.
Yeah, welcome. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's good stuff. You brought samples with you. We had a dusty just a minute ago to kind of get started. And for people who aren't familiar with that term, I had a friend introduce me to this a while back. And this particular bottle is from what year, we think?
So this would have been 1985.
Yeah, Chapin and Gore, straight bourbon whiskey. It was $6. Was the price on it here. I see when we found it, but outstanding, only on 93 proof. Thank you for giving me a pour of that, because we could probably do an entire episode on the Dusties.
We brought the expensive stuff this morning, so yeah. $6.
Hey, you didn't spare any expense. I do appreciate that. I've done a segment before on people starting a whiskey society, where people get together maybe once a month, maybe once every other month, and doing samples and kind of pooling their money to buy bottles you might not normally be able to get. Tell me what went into planning the St. Louis Bourbon Society. That's kind of taken it. You guys have kind of taken it to a new level, haven't you?
Well, I was looking around in the St. Louis area for kind of a group to join, a social group, and not really finding what I was looking for. I stumbled across Facebook page by James, and he was posting about bourbon and everything else. So I messaged him and asked, how can we get together? Where do you guys have your gatherings, your meetings? And he wrote back that we haven't gotten that far yet. Like, he's only online. So we actually got together and had our first kind of meeting. And kind of decided that, I think there's an opportunity in St. Louis for some fellowship in bourbon, unlike what was kind of already out there. And so that's how the whole idea was born out of that. We wanted to have unique experiences for the people who would be gathering with us.
And, you see the pictures, the lap shots, I call them, for lack of a better term, of somebody that's found a great bottle here or a great bottle there, and they're kind of tipping people off. But also what I notice when I go onto your Facebook page is, in the group, people who are it's more than just the bourbon trail. I mean, there are people out there buying, obviously going out and selecting their own barrels, doing barrel picks, and the level of involvement is so much greater than just a let's get together once a month kind of thing.
Yeah, we decided early on that we will not have any meetings. Meetings were not allowed.
Nice.
We want to have unique experiences So everything we do, we try to have an experience for our members and give them something new. So we try not to repeat the same thing if we can avoid it.
What does that look like? I mean, from the time you started to where we are now in terms of the number of members or people that are on the page, in the thousands now, right?
Yeah. So I guess I started the Facebook group in December of 2016. There were probably about 500 people maybe that were on the page after, you know, maybe a year and a half or so. And that's, you know, when I met Drew, we kind of got together and we're like, hey, this could actually be something fun. And after a couple of drinks, we both agreed it could be something fun. Imagine what that'll have that happen. But
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the page has really exploded, you know, from that time back in 2018, maybe when I met you, till today, yeah, where we're, you know, approaching 11,000 people that are following us on social media. So it's been a pretty wild ride. And, you know, when you expand that much too, a lot of whiskey groups, some of them want to be really small. They want to be, you know, that intimate kind of thing. That was never really our kind of goal from the beginning. It was really meant to be, you know, inclusive, to grow, to, you know, to share those experiences, what we call fellowship in the spirit. You know, and it's done just that. Now, when you grow, you also come with, you know, problems because, you know, you just, people always say, oh, we need to get bigger and bigger and bigger. Well, with that growth, as an indie in the industry or, you know, group, you get a lot of challenges along the way that really, you know, you have to kind of overcome as you go along. So
what's been the most rewarding part of it for you? Because I imagine people will listen to a podcast like this and think, well, they started one, I'd like to start one myself. And now you've grown it to this point after 6 years, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, what's the most rewarding part for you?
The fellowship. So getting people together in a unique space where we can all experience something new and enjoy a good pour of bourbon or whiskey. That, to me, you stand around and it doesn't matter if you're with five people or if you're with 500. The fact that you're standing there in person, especially after the whole COVID episode, it really makes you appreciate, you know, being able to stand there and discuss that bourbon or whiskey with somebody in person. That's the most rewarding thing, honestly, to me.
And people, I notice a lot of people in the group go and do the tours. I did a separate podcast, which people can find wherever they've downloaded this podcast, on the Bourbon Trail, certainly. But I've also used you guys for inspiration for segments because I noticed one of your members had gone up and met with the head distiller at Lady Jane up in New York a while back. So I reached out to them and I managed to get her on the podcast and we did an interview with her about, you know, what she's trying to do up there. That's a little unusual with women who have become master distillers in the industry.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, our members are very diverse. You know, you have everybody from, you know, brand new to the bourbon scene to we have people in our group who have been doing it for 40 years. But the great part is that they all help each other and share that knowledge with the new ones and the older ones who have been doing it for a while, you know, can help us, guide us a little bit too as far as our group goes. So yeah, our members are fantastic. They really are very generous and work together to help each other out.
Yeah, I think it's great, and it's it's the social media way of getting together. I mean, there may not be meetings, but I see people taking trips to distilleries. And one thing you guys have done, what did you tell me? How many barrel picks have you participated in now?
We've been averaging around 35 to 40 a year. This year will probably be probably 40 to 45.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know we talked earlier. You knew my friend Brian Schneider had come down, yeah, and we did a piece on,
yeah,
with
Brian's
him.
Great guy.
Yeah, yeah, we
Brian's
did an episode
awesome
on, mm-hmm, the difference between a barrel pick that he, mm-hmm, might sell at his cigar store, Lit,
yeah,
versus something you might get off the shelf that says barrel pick on it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The interesting part about single barrels is, you know, years ago, the idea was, most people would go to the store and they'd buy the same bottle because they knew every time they bought that bottle it was going to be consistent, right? It was going to be, this is what I buy. It's going to be early times every time. I want it to taste the same. And the kind of the script is flipped now because now we're all looking for something different every time, aren't we? We're all looking for that unique one note that we want to pick out of a single barrel that we can't get off the shelf. So single barrels have really exploded in the last 4 or 5 years, so everything from restaurants to retailers to social media groups.
Mm-hmm.
And again, what it provides is a very unique experience, right? So it's not just about having a different kind of bottle, but the fact you can do it with some buddies, or you can do it with a whole group, or you can do it with whoever you want, and you get to hand select that barrel to the preference of your palate. That is something, and then you put your name on it, which is amazing. So I think it's a very unique thing you can do with some buddies or a group, and I think it's just going to keep growing.
Yeah, I have to wonder about that because I talked to Brian about it. I've talked to a few other folks. You almost have to these days, unless you're independently wealthy, you almost have to go in with a group of people when you're doing a barrel pick, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, true. Most of them are done either with an on-premise account, either a restaurant or a bar, or doing it with some of the local stores that we've made good partnerships with, here in the area, like the Wine and Cheese Place or Randall's, et cetera, where we get out with them and try to, do some fun things with them and get their shelf, with some unique picks on them.
So. Yeah, the costs have gone up in the past, I imagine, 6 years since you started, too. Everything else.
We wouldn't be able to financially afford to buy a single barrel these days, and we wouldn't want to. Obviously, we don't have a liquor license. That's not what we do. But what we do enjoy doing is partnering with locally owned businesses, restaurants, and retailers. And, we provide our expertise to help with these picks, and then we help market these bottles for them, and they put them on their shelf, and then our members go to their premise, whether it's a restaurant or the retailer, and then they were driving the traffic to them.
Sure.
So we're putting the traffic in the store, and then the store hopefully can, they can benefit from people buying additional bottles, or if it's a restaurant, hopefully they stay for a cocktail and appetizer.
Right.
And that kind of supports the local, and that's kind of, we're always about supporting local anytime we can, and we partner with a lot of places to try to move that forward as much as possible.
It's good stuff. Drew and James with me here from the St. Louis Bourbon Society. What are we sampling right now? I know, is this the Barrel Seagrass? And this is the 15-year, you said?
Yeah, this is the 15-year Seagrass. So essentially, it's a rye whiskey that's finished in Martinique rum cask, agricole cask, apricot brandy cask, and Madeira cask, and then aged for 16 years. So it's really complex. It's kind of the older brother of the younger Seagrass that you can find pretty available in most stores for about $60 to $70 or so.
Right.
This one was just aged a little longer, gives it a little bit more complexity, I guess, in age. You can kind of taste the age shining through in it a little bit. So it's a good bottle. It's not a cheaper bottle. Mostly you can find them online, a couple retail stores here, but probably goes somewhere in that $200 range-ish. But if you like the taste of seagrass and you're wanting to expand a little palate a little bit more, this may be a good bottle, but it is expensive.
Yeah,
so
true.
Whenever you get into some of these higher age products, time is literally money, as they say. Well, same thing holds true for, bourbon that sits in a barrel. So, but it's a great product, though.
And you two get the opportunity to kind of observe from the 30,000 foot level as people discover new things, because you brought in this morning some things you would consider to be allocations, and then we got some things that a lot of people might, I don't know, if you consider yourself a bourbon snob, you might turn your nose up at as being a lower shelf kind of bourbon. Yeah. Is that part of the thrill of it, is finding that next good bourbon?
James has a very good theory on this whole discussion about the hunt and everything else. So I'll let James defer. But when he first told me this kind of analogy, I was early on in my kind of my bourbon journey. And everything he says about this is absolutely true. And I've progressed through those levels, just like he's going to describe. And, it makes sense. So I'll let kind of James describe this, because it's very accurate about everybody who's in the bourbon world and what they're going to go through when they start experiencing bourbon and whiskey.
Yeah, I'd love to hear it.
Well, so many moons ago, I used to teach hunter safety courses for the conservation department here in St. Louis. And as kind of that training, we would kind of go through the kind of segments that people would go through in their journey as being a hunter. And the first thing that, you know, usually people would start out is, I have no idea what I'm doing. What gear do I need to buy? Do I need the expensive stuff, the cheap stuff? Is this, you know, a ripoff kind of thing, et cetera, et cetera? And, you know, and you kind of start out as a newbie, right? You don't know much, and you're really just trying to figure out, hey, what am I doing here? And then after that, what you do is you go to your first thing is, which I just want to kill a deer.
Yeah,
I don't care right. how big it is, what it looks like. If it's moving, you know, I want to harvest an animal that I can, you know, eat. So after you move into that section, then you move into, now I want to kill as many as I can. So then it's kind of more of the, you know, I got 4 deer this year. Okay, so after that, then you move into the, okay, I've killed a deer. I've killed a bunch of deer. Now I want the biggest deer that I can get with the most, you know, antlers on my wall, right? So you're going from quantity to quality. And then from there, you go into the final stages where you've already done all of it. And what you want to do is essentially, you know, steward others in learning that hobby, right? Learning that skill, learning that craft. So this is kind of the same analogy a little bit in the world of bourbon, where you'll start out, you look at a liquor store shelf where there are 100,000 bottles on the shelf and go, I have no idea what I'm looking at. So you start gaining information, right? Listening to podcasts like this one. What do I enjoy, et cetera? Learning your palate a little bit. Then you start collecting bottles. Then it goes from the obsession of I'm gonna grab one bottle to I need to get a bunch of bottles now. So that's where the madness begins.
Yes.
Right? You go from having one or two bottles to now all of a sudden you have, you know, 20 or 30 bottles collected at home and you're like, where am I gonna store all these? Oh no, I need to buy a cabinet, et cetera. And you know, so once you've gotten a bunch of bottles, then you're looking for, okay, you know what? I need to buy, I'm looking for a special bottle, something that's more unique. You know, your selection might jump up to a bottle that's a little more expensive or a little older, et cetera. You know, you're getting that one with a little more antlers on it. And then finally, after, you know, a while, that could be different times for certain people, you know, you'll get to the point where you're like, you know what? I've collected a bunch of bottles. I've sampled a bunch of stuff. And then you can kind of take somebody under your wing and say, who's new, you know, where should I start at? I'm new to this hobby. Where do I want to, you know, how do I get into this? And, you know, so you know what to give them. You don't want to give somebody brand new to bourbon. Here, try this, you know, 140 proof George C. Stagg hazmat bottle.
Right.
Because they'll try that and that will be their, you know, their thing is they'll think, oh, all bourbon tastes this way. I don't want that. I'm not liking that. So start them out with something a little lower proof that they can kind of grow into, or maybe throw a cube into it, you know, proof it down a little bit yourself, et cetera, and have them, you know, start their journey in the right way. So
I love that. It's very, very reminiscent of my own journey in bourbon, from only going into a place and ordering a bourbon and Coke years ago to, you know, finally trying to drink it neat, and you develop a taste for what you like. And I've found myself a big rye fan these days. I've kind of moved into rye. That's kind of where I am. And it's weird. I mean, I'm still happy. I love Weller is one of my just go-tos when I can find it. Just the green label, just for a neat pour. I love that.
Well, you're really going to like this one then.
Oh, I'll bet I will. I bet I will, guys.
Yeah, when James was describing that analogy to me, it's been a few years now. I kind of laugh and chuckle at myself now all the time because I'm like, you know what? I just went to the next level, and then I went to another level. And you're realizing, yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's just like that. And now I think we're both, and he was already there before me, but we're both in that stewardship phase now where it's like, you know, you're trying to bring along the people who are new to it and just have so many questions. And you don't want them to make the same mistakes that we made, you know, when we bought the wrong stuff or listened to the wrong people.
Yeah.
You know, now we try to help them as much as we can because, you know, I think all too often those who have been in bourbon for many, many years kind of forget that they all started in the same place.
Right.
And we try to remind ourselves on daily, you know, yes, we realize the question that the person's asking might be pretty basic, but, you know, I probably ask that same question
or had that question. Had even that question. If you didn't ask it, you had the question.
I had that question. So, you know, we try to, again, we try to just help them any way we can because, you know, bourbon should be enjoyed by all. This is not an exclusive product. You know, I think definitely scotch and some other spirits, even some wine has gotten a bad rep because they've made it so dang exclusive anymore.
Right.
And you're afraid to get into it because you're like, oh my goodness, they know so much. Whiskey and bourbon are not that way. This is a product for everybody, period.
I love that. It's very true, and appreciate what you guys are doing. Because forever I'll get on your page or one of the other pages that I follow, and somebody's like, oh, you know, I'm really looking for a hint, a bottle of Pappy. Has anybody seen one in the St. Louis area or here or there? Anybody got a lead on one? People are always out there looking for things like that.
Yeah, we have to be careful how we answer those. Because I realize, you know, day one, you're on our page or on any social media page for bourbon, and the first thing you see is a bottle of, you know, Blanton's or Pappy, and of course that's what you want. But you got to kind of reel them back and realize that you know, they need to start kind of a different level. They need to start over here, understand where these products came from before you kind of move on up. I think sometimes if you jump right to a allocated bottle, you're not going to appreciate what is really happening there.
Well, that's a great point. What did you pop open over there a minute ago? I heard the cork coming out of a bottle.
Like I said, we do a lot of barrel picks, and we're excited to do this one. This is Backbone Bourbon, and this is a 6.5-year uncut product. It's an MGP product, and the company Backbone sources the barrels, and sometimes they even not only just sourcing the barrels and bottling them, but they actually take them, in some cases, actually put them in their own rick houses and continue aging them. So they're doing some really good stuff. I would liken this to for about $60 what this costs. This is very on par with Smoke Wagon Uncut Unfiltered, which is running between $80 and $90 a bottle right now, if you can find it, which is not even available in Missouri. So sometimes there are alternatives to some of those harder fine bottles. This one's available at Randall's right now.
Oh, nice.
$60 on the shelf.
And then Backbone is the name of it.
Backbone Bourbon Uncut.
I had a friend bring me some Smoke Wagon from Texas.
Product.
He had his wife was traveling on business to Texas, and she found a bottle of it, a couple bottles down there, and bought them. So
we'll actually be doing an event with Smoke Wagon coming up the beginning of May. So we'll have Aaron, the master blender there from Smoke Wagon, on to do an event for our membership coming up in just a couple of short weeks.
In person? Are they doing
this will be virtual.
Remote virtual?
This will be virtual because like I said, he is out in Las Vegas. So we do quite a lot of we've done. That's a whole other story. But, you know, the pandemic really made us think and consider different models as we've kind of worked, you know, throughout the last 2 years. But the virtual tastings have also afforded us a unique way to be able to have tastings with some of the most interesting and talented master distillers in the entire country because of that virtual landscape. So, you know, the pandemic has kind of, you know, shined a light on some of the technology that we probably wouldn't have used. I mean, this past year, I was just joking the other night, we did a virtual cured ham and bourbon tasting with Michter's. On Zoom.
That was so much fun.
I would have probably laughed if you would have thought about that 3 or 4 years ago. But, you know, to do it, and we pulled it off, and it was a wonderful time. We had Andrew Wilson, the master of maturation at Dan McKee, the master distiller at Michter's, come on. And we sampled through different products from Michter's, you know, pairing it with different cured hams. Not just one, but several from all over the country. And it was just... It was a great time.
What we've realized in this endeavor so far is that ideas are abundant. Actually, executing any of them is extremely difficult.
true.
Sometimes.
So, logistically, like that one there, I mean, the idea was so good, we just had to pursue it. And just so happened that we had a friend that actually is in Louisville and has the contacts for a lot of friends who have great cured hams. And well, that's not even the hard part. The hard part is how do you cut it, slice it, package it, ship it, and he did all that for us. And it was a huge endeavor. It was a lot of labor,
sure,
because we needed 80 of those kits.
Oh my god!
So
people could could pay to participate? Is that kind of how it went?
You could buy a ticket. It gets you the sample kit of the Michter's that we were sampling that pairs with the individual cured ham. And you know what? Leading up to, of course, it took a lot of effort.
But a lot.
But seeing all those faces on screen during the pandemic, and everybody smiling and enjoying themselves and really getting into this pairing, this really nicely fatty, salty cured hams with these amazing Michter's bourbons. Tell you what, that moment right there, when I sat there and looked at that screen, I just had to sit back and say, gosh, this is so much fun. I want to just keep doing this forever because people are smiling. They're enjoying themselves, you know, and in the middle of a pandemic, we were just, I was amazed and so proud of the team and everybody that was involved in it because it really brought a unique experience to everybody who participated.
I love the backbone, by the way. I don't know that this has anything to do with the name, but it hits you right in the middle of the palate. When I tasted it, it for some reason hit me right in the middle of my tongue near the back. It's a very full-bodied flavor that's just outstanding.
These guys were sourcing many years ago, I think back as far as 2011, I believe. And essentially they had their vendors they're using, and they were getting ready to kind of roll out some more and expand, and they're getting more popular, and the one source they're using backed out on them.
Oh.
And they were very, you know, very upset.
I'm sure, yeah.
And so that's how they were trying to roll out, this product. This was going to be named something else. And when that source backed out, and they had to find a new source, well, the new source ended up being MGP, and they were very happy to work with them, and they built a great relationship. But essentially what they said was, I wish the other source had more backbone to, you know, see that where we were going was going to be worth it in the end. And that's how the name came about.
Part of the enjoyment of all of this is the backstory, in my opinion. I love hearing
very much from these folks
who have the guts, like still 6:30 downtown, who I had on, right?
Dave's awesome.
Has got dozens of, maybe hundreds of different bourbons down there. I can't believe it when I walked in the store. It looked, you know, it's an old Hardee's building.
It's a library, right?
It's
his
a library.
Library is amazing.
It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. It's just, it's up, it's on the ceiling, it's on the wall, it's on the floor. It's like, oh my goodness.
It's great. So anybody who's coming to St. Louis, if you're listening to this, you got to go to Still 630 right here in town and try some of this. Guys, I appreciate you bringing all this in. Let's talk about, obviously, we're drinking some of the stuff that's $60 a bottle. I know some of the allocation stuff's a lot more than that. Let's talk about the lower shelf stuff you brought in, because people struggle maybe with the expense of it. You want to enjoy this regardless of maybe how much you can afford. You can enjoy bourbon. You don't have to have a $100 bottle of bourbon, clearly. I've done a podcast on the best bourbons under $40. Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about what you guys brought in this morning.
I think what you just said was really indicative of bourbon, is that it doesn't matter the price of the bottle to get together and have some fellowship with some friends and family.
Right.
You know, you can have as good a time with a $19 bottle as you can a $200 bottle. It's all about the experience, right, in the moment. So, yeah, we brought some bottles that are on the bottom shelf pretty much every day. You can find them just about anywhere. But we've put these bottles in the blinds with expensive bottles, and these all have won. These have all been winners.
Wow. So, and what I see sitting there is a bottle that I might never have walked into a store and purchased, because I used to drink it when I was a college student. No, Evan Williams. Never been an Evan Williams. I've always.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Temp check. What kind of summer are we having this year? A family road trip summer? A beach bum summer? Or a wake me when the sun sets summer? With Instacart, choose your own adventure and skip the shopping side quests. Where available, you can get ice cream delivered to your hotel, sunscreen to the pool, or cold brew to your bed. Well, door, in as fast as 30 minutes. Wherever you find yourself this summer, you can get the goods. Download Instacart for free delivery on your first three orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Minimum $10 per order. Excludes restaurants. Additional terms and fees apply.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.
Had a lower version or view, I should say, of Evan Williams because it was always the bottom shelf stuff, right? I just that's kind of been my take on it. I love that you brought some in and early times, which is another one I've got sitting here on the shelf in front of me. Thank you. Yeah, it's good. So this is a 100 proof Evan Williams bottled in bond, which speaks to the quality that's put into it. But we're all guilty of that, right? We're all guilty of. Assigning a worth to a name that we've known for a long time and maybe ignoring it for that reason, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, the bottom shelf is really a funny marketing because, I mean, literally it's the bottom shelf. That's where people don't look, right? So, you know, all the brands that the distilleries and distributors are trying to push are on the middle shelf and upper shelf because that's where your eyesight line is. But, you know, you can find a lot of great deals and great bourbon on that bottom shelf that's just been kind of passed over by the marketing teams of the companies that provide them. So, yeah, these are some of the ones that I think by far should always be on your bar. And whether you're a daily drinker or otherwise, this is something you should probably go out and grab one of these because they are very affordable. And you can, I think this bottle here is Evan Williams 100 proof. I've seen as low as $12.99, as high as $19.99.
Yeah.
And I would take this over probably a majority of these bottles any day of the week.
Wow. And you got some old granddad there, some early times, which I also remember from my college days, that now you think, well, I'm a sophisticated bourbon drinker. I'm not buying that stuff. I think that's great. I love the blind taste test stuff.
Yeah, I think once you get to a certain point in your bourbon journey and you've bought all the bottles you can buy, all the allocated stuff that you can possibly get your hands on, you end up circling back to either trying to find a more unique bottom shelfers, or you might be searching for dusties, or you know, it's going to be you're always hunting for something,
right?
And
right.
at some point, you're going to come back to something like this.
Well, there's that is surprisingly good.
There's a good benchmark to use where, you know, our group is very focused on education. A lot of the events that we do, especially a lot of the monthly tastings that we do, they're very focused on education. A lot of the posts that we can try to get up are, you know, education driven. And one of the biggest things with education is. It starts with reading the label. If you're not reading the label, then you don't know what's going on with the bottle and what's in it. So, you know, for example, you'll notice that a lot of these bottles that we're kind of presenting here as some of the lower shelf bottles, they're all going to use the great three words, which is bottled and bond.
You know,
if
immediately.
If you see those, you know that you were at least dealing with a product that's going to be, you know, quality. And in we did a couple of events. Several years ago, we did a big blind tasting with about 75 people called Spirits in the Dark. It was around Halloween time, right? Spirits, dark, right? Blind.
Got it.
I don't think people quite grasped it, but
they didn't get
it was a neat name. Yeah.
But it was a great event. And
We overthought that one, sorry.
Yeah, we tried to get too creative. We should just called it blind tasting, you know, and then people would have gotten it more. But it was great. We did it with very early on with Pops and Bourbon and Banner here in St. Louis. They're a national syndicated group. And
Patrick Garrett, he's awesome.
Yeah, he's a great guy. Anyway, we did this really nice blind tasting, and we had probably 8 different really good whiskeys to try that night. And the one that ended up winning, we always joke about, was JTS Brown. It's basically $16 a bottle, and it was the 100-proof version, the bottled and bond version, which won out of all of the others.
And Heaven Hill bottom shelf.
Yep. So you take a lot of that bias out, you really see, number one, what your palate enjoys. You know, and then you don't have a price tag associated with it. So there's no marketing. There's no BS. It's, you know, it gets very grassroots.
It's amazing how much a label persuades people's purchasing. It's, you know, and I'm guilty too. I look at some of these bottles, like this Penelope bottle is just gorgeous. You know, it really is. Luckily, the stuff in there is amazing. But, you know, some of these bottles just look the part, right?
Right.
So it makes you want to buy them. Now, like the early times, this label here is pretty basic. And if you saw that on the bottom shelf, you probably would just pass over it. But, you know, this is a product here that's just, you know, excellent.
Good to know. And speaking of bottles, I see you've got the Willett shirt on over there.
Yeah.
Beautiful bottle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people have mixed reviews on it. You're
very
right. You absolutely,
reviews, yes.
It's like with cars or anything else, you have a preconception of what you're going to get when you walk in there.
The Willett pot still bottle, people either love it or they hate it. I mean, every time somebody posts it on our page, it's like I start to cringe. You know, some people say this is my jam. Some people say I use this for a doorstop. I mean, pretty bottles you have to be wary of. And some of them, you know, some of the products can be good in a nice looking bottle, you know, like this, the Hard Truth, for example. It's a beautiful looking bottle and the product inside is amazing as well. You know, so you can see some companies just get a little more expressive with their bottles. So, you know, the bottles mean something to them. Like, for example, this one or one of my other favorite distilleries is Frey Ranch, which is out of Nevada, Fallon, right. Nevada. And what's great is, you know, you have to take time to actually learn why these things matter. And when we did an event with them last year during the pandemic, they did a great virtual walkthrough of their distillery. And they actually took the time to talk about the bottle. And, you know, interestingly enough, on a bottle of Frey Ranch, if you look at it, it's got a wraparound label, but the front of it has a big rectangle. And he said that was actually meaningful to him as the distillery maker or the product maker, because he said, my grandpa handed down this belt buckle to me from the 1850s. And he said it was a meaningful part of my family history, and that's part of that bottle. So, I mean, a lot of it's just taking the time to really, you know, understand why things are, you know, they just didn't appear out of nowhere. I mean, there's actually a history to them. So that's always been one of the parts, you know, like Drew said, I love the fellowship part of the group, the getting together. I'm also a big proponent of the history, you know, learning about these products, where they came from, you know, the people that made them, how they got here, how they got to being into Kentucky or, you know, at the time really West Virginia until Kentucky was a state, you know, and how they transpired. And then really educating people and going into a little bit of a deeper dive on some of this stuff is really the amazing part.
I love it. Do you deal with a region bias too? Because I see this Hard Truth that you showed me here, the Sweet Mash Rye, is made in Brown County, Indiana. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know a lot of Evansville and that area right on the Kentucky border. Mm-hmm. I know MGP has some houses, rack houses there, if I'm not wrong on that.
A lot of it's just the educational part,
right?
You know? I mean, you know, things have expanded obviously a lot in recent years outside of Kentucky, which I love Kentucky. My family is from Kentucky, but I, you know, there's some great products in Indiana, especially in the rye whiskey department, that are amazing. Especially the Pennsylvania, Indiana, the upper state of New York, and that area. Just some of the stuff that is coming out of those states is truly amazing. And like Hard Truth, you know, they found a new kind of interesting way of making their products. So they don't just char the barrels. They actually smoke their barrels in an in-house smoker. And it gives it a completely unique taste that many probably have not experienced before. And we're actually going to be blessed to have them come as part of the 2022 St. Louis Bourbon Festival this year as one of our you know, premium event presenters. So Brian Smith and all the guys at Hard Truth are doing some amazing things.
By the way,
wow!
By the way, you can walk through the barrel smoking house, and once you're in there, you don't want to leave.
I'll bet you don't. I'll bet you don't.
It's a small little shack. I think it holds about 12 barrels. But I can't even do it justice explaining the system because it's all proprietary. But when you're there and they show you what level they've taken this to, smoking a barrel before they add their liquid to it, I mean, these guys are really good innovators. Really
yeah, what do you think of
this? I don't say wow very often, I'll be honest with you.
That hits you.
Yeah.
So Fred Minnick actually named this the number one rye of the year. The Sweet Mash.
Can you
rye
find it locally? Nashville Can you one. Find it here?
So funny you say that.
Yep.
We were there. We did some barrel picks with them. And when we were there, Ann Gasher, who is their state development person, she said she was approved that day that we were there for Missouri. So you'll start seeing Hartshoe's products in Missouri right now.
Okay.
So, yeah. Now, the Sweet Mash Rye, they're on Mash Bill 3 probably at this point in Missouri. So this is Sweet Mash 1.
Okay.
And Brian is adamant that, as good as 1 was, and it won accolades with Fred Minnick, and he's a great bourbon authority. Essentially, Brian says that he thinks Sweet Mash 3 is even better. So we haven't got our hands on a bottle of that yet, but we're excited to because we really love this one.
And it will be coming to Missouri more. And,
what's the price point?
You know, I want to say somewhere in the 60s, maybe.
Is it? That's very reasonable.
I want to say like 79.
Is it a little more than that?
A very unique bottle, too, with a kind of a rough-looking cork on the top of it. And if you get a chance to find it, it's well worth your time if you love rye.
They are putting out a lot of rye right now, which is great. And they have some great experimentals that we tried that they're working on.
Yeah.
And then their bourbon is almost ready. So I think within a year or year and a half, their bourbon will be out, too.
Yeah.
And their rickhouses are amazing. I mean, they are ready to go. With their product.
Well, yeah. This is why this is why I wanted to do this podcast, because you're hearing information that, you know, if you're like me and you're learning and you want to try new things, it's just a wealth of information here. And James and Drew, I appreciate you guys coming in so much. The honey barrel here, I want to get to the last small bottle you've got. Explain what we've got here. You described this as something you guys picked out.
Yeah, so this actually was a collaboration that we did with Old Herald, which is a brewery/distillery over in Collinsville, Illinois. So Derek over there, who's their owner, he loves making beer and he also loves distilling. So and what he did was essentially he has, I call his basement kind of a labyrinth. So he has a lot of his barrels that are aging down in the basement of the brewery over there. And he had a couple of barrels that were sourced from MGP. And so what we wanted to do was we partnered with him to kind of create a whole experience for some of the members in our group. And what we did was we had about, I think about 8-10 people maybe or so. And we started by going over and we had the kind of the original plan was to find the best barrel that we could as far as the whiskey goes. Once I think we sampled through about probably 5, maybe 6 barrels, something like that. And then after we kind of determined what was a good flavor profile that we wanted to use for a base, he had a whole barrel of local honey. So we drained that barrel of honey, and then he eventually ended up bottling it and selling it. That was given to our members as well. And what we did was we put that whiskey into the honey cask. And so all along that project, what we did was we came back, and so that was the original time where we had everybody come in, tasted the whiskey, picked the base of it, then dumped it into that honey barrel.
Oh.
And then we had that whole team of 10 people come back in about 6 months, and then they were able to sample it again. Hey, where do you think this is at? Do you think it's ready to bottle?
You see why now we prefer to have experiences over meetings. And, you know, you can have a meeting anywhere, right?
Right.
So we literally try to have these unique experiences for our members, no matter where it might be. It might be picking a barrel. It might be creating a barrel. It might be at an actual event of ours. But the idea is we can get together anywhere. Let's make it cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what happened, really, is that this was not only an educational session, it was a hands-on session. So we had, once we got it out, we kind of determined, hey, okay, this is, we thought that it was pretty much ready to barrel. So, I take that back. We said, you know what, it's pretty good. We waited another month or two and gave it a little more time, and then we came in and actually siphoned it all from one barrel into the bottling line, And all the people that were part of that experience actually got to be a part of it. We put it all into bottles, and then we actually let them heat shrink everything on the bottle as it was filling, creating an assembly line. Of course, we were able to sample the product.
Well, I would hope
quality
so.
Purposes.
Yeah.
Quality control. you know, but it was wonderful. And, you know, I mean, some of the people there were, you know, just blown away by the experience to be able to do that. And so then we released it to our membership community, you know, as a unique one-off, you know, honey barrel.
And as someone who's not always been a huge fan of flavored bourbons, that's not something that the honey taste is not overbearing, right? Mm-hmm. It's not a wild turkey honey kind of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's actually a cask finish, so it's not a flavoring.
Yeah, right.
It still, you know, meets all the requirements of a whiskey. And so it's just a cask finish. So it's a finished barrel is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I was standing there watching this process, when we were doing this assembly line, this bottling line, I think the funny part was from the person at the beginning of the line to the end, I had you know, corporate executives. I had, you know, business owners. I had politicians, all the way
pilots.
All the way down to, you know, blue collar workers. And the smile on their faces was all the same. It was ear to ear.
Yeah.
Every one of them.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like we're putting these guys to work. You know, and these are people in their own industries who are titans. And in the end, they just wanted to have something fun to do. You know, they really enjoyed the process of how does it go from that barrel to that bottle? And we showed them. And that was the most interesting thing about the whole event was that, you know, you could be there and put your hands on the bottle, put your hands on the cask. And now when this bottle came out, you could say, you know what, I was there.
Like, I was there, saw that happen.
I put that label on, or I put that cap on, whatever. So they really enjoyed it. We had fun with it.
Yeah, can people still buy it?
It's no. Actually sold out at this point.
Okay, all right.
We sold it out within 3 days.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. It was about $375, so there was about 360 bottles.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We tried to make it as available as possible. Where in $375, there was twice as many bottles, just because we wanted everybody to be able to get a sample of it. But yeah, it like a lot of our single barrels goes pretty quickly. So.
Well, it's really, really good. It's good stuff, as all this has. Great information, gentlemen. I mean, I can't thank you enough for coming in and enlightening people. I'm sure the people listening to this who aren't even in St. Louis see what you're doing here, and maybe they're inspired to do that wherever they are, right? Because, like you said, it's an experience. It's not just about meeting somewhere. It's about experiencing this, the fellowship.
Yeah. Finding somebody else who may not be, you know, somebody you'd normally hang out and drink with, but... They admire good bourbon.
Yeah, and nothing against meetings and however groups get together, all of it works, right? It's all fellowship regardless. We just prefer our meetings to be outside of the usual realm, but it doesn't matter. However you want to get together, open a bottle, and have some fellowship.
Well, James Drew, St. Louis Bourbon Society, thank you guys so much for being part of the MASH and kind of, you know, letting us... get a good feel for why you did this, and it's fantastic stuff. Thank you for coming in.
Yeah, we had a great time. We really appreciate being here with you and enjoying some spirits that I think that we might have a couple more after.
Well, I hope so. Yeah, and I see this Red Label Weller over here that I really have my eye on. Look at that. He's waving it at me. I know you can't see that. It's not good podcast stuff, but we appreciate you guys being part of this today. If people want to find out more about the St. Louis Bourbon Society, is the Facebook page the best place to do that?
Yeah, we're on Facebook. Obviously, just search St. Louis Bourbon Society. Instagram is STL Bourbon Society. We have a website, stlouisbourbonsociety.com. And we also have a YouTube channel too. Just search St. Louis Bourbon Society for reviews on our YouTube channel. And please join us. We'd like to have a conversation with you about bourbon.
Excellent. Yeah, gentlemen,
let's do it.
Thank you very much, James Thomas, Drew Chosner. We appreciate you being part of this today in the St. Louis Bourbon Society. Outstanding stuff. Hope you enjoyed this episode of The MASH. You'll hear here in a minute how you can submit your own ideas. If you got some thoughts on a future episode, maybe something we haven't experienced yet. That's what this is all about. We appreciate you being here. I'm Mark Cox, your host. We'll see you on the next episode of The MASH.
You're listening to The Mash, all bourbon, all the time. If you've got ideas for an upcoming episode, email us at mark.cox@odyssey.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.